This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From the Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Wow, here we go. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here this hour. Congressman Chip Roy wants to be the next Attorney General in Texas. He's an impactful lawmaker. He's going to be with us in a matter of moments. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, former Florida Congressman, but obviously warfighter as well as one of the newest Texans making an impact. And I'm not sure we'll be able to squeeze in some calls already today. We're hours away from a lockdown. We are also looking at a countdown for Hamas to accept with the Arab world, with the President of the United States, and Bibi Netanyahu has signed off on, not only to end the war in Gaza, but to bring a plan forward, an outline of what peace looks like. It's pretty amazing. Also, we just witnessed Secretary of War Pete Hegseth just give a flawless address. It lasted, I think, 45 minutes. President's heading there now to address all the generals and their aides in at Quantico, Virginia. And it was a flawless presentation. The content was crisp and direct. Political correctness is done. No special circumstances when it comes to women or your sexual preference. Done. It's who can do the job effectively, get a haircut, clean up, make boot camp again. All that, all merit only will be successful here. Forget about no more fat troops, no more fat generals. There's going to be two tests a year. FAFO, you could spell that out. And the speech was really to the people that make up the fighting force and the challenges that are straight ahead. And the way he presented it, And the content of the speech, to me, flat out phenomenal. And I thought the most telling, as we bring in Congressman Chip Roy, the most telling line was this: if this speech makes your stomach churn, do yourself a favor and get out, as I paraphrase. But if you're pumped up about this and if you're loving the message here, you're in the right place. Joining us now is Congressman Chip Roy. Congressman, I know you got a lot to do, so if you weren't able to get to the TV, I thoroughly understand. But were you able to take in any of the secretary's address?
Yeah, Brian, I was able to catch about a 4-minute snippet just a minute ago, and I could not agree more. I mean, look, you know, my son is 16 years old, Brian, and I don't know about you, but I look forward, and there for a while, I was thinking, man, you know, if my son wants to go to military academy or say Texas A&M, his mom went to A&M. I'd be nervous because of where the leadership of the military, and including obviously President Biden, was taking it. But man, that speech reinvigorates my belief, my faith, my confidence that we are putting together a warfighting machine that is dedicated to the task of defending this country rather than advancing a crazy woke agenda that would not just endanger and weaken our country, but endanger the very men and women you're asking to go fight for us. So God bless the secretary. Pete's a friend, and it's just great to see your friends right when they're out there fighting, like Russ Vogt, for example, office management and budget right now as we're in shutdown world. But man, it was a great speech by Pete.
Well, you're the ultimate fighter in Congress, and I know you're going to be missed when you become Attorney General. But just for people that missed it, I was on the set on Fox and Friends, and when Pete used to be on the set of Fox and Friends, here's the Secretary of War. Here's a little of what he did. He fired about 20% of the generals. Listen, cut 39.
As you have seen, and the media has obsessed over, I have fired a number of senior officers since taking over. The previous chairman, other members of the Joint Chiefs, combatant commanders, and other commanders. The rationale for me has been straightforward. It's nearly impossible to change a culture with the same people who helped create or even benefited from that culture, even if that culture was created by a previous president and previous secretary. My approach has been simple. When in doubt, assess the situation, follow your gut, and if it's the best for the military, make a change. We all serve at the pleasure of the president every single day.
And the president's going to be there soon. So he has let a lot of people go. And that whole, he also said this, and to be honest, Congressman, these people are in the military, they're making a career of it, they're near 17, let's say, and all of a sudden President Biden comes in. And they hear about diversity and forget about enforcing dress code and be more open and be more understanding and take bias training. And he says, it's not your fault, but I still can't have you around.
No, that's exactly right. And look, I want to go back. I mean, go back a couple of years when Marco Rubio was still a senator and I was in Congress, obviously, where I still am. We put out a report called Woke Warfighters, where we detailed in about 20 pages a lot of what we're seeing Pete Hegseth address right now and talking about how we diverged from the purpose, how critical race theory was being advanced, how there were stand-down orders, how there were woke generals, as Pete is just acknowledging there, how the service academies were being used to carry out critical race theory, how, and I can keep going down the list. Remember the rainbow, you know, bullet stuff we were putting out there? Like, these guys were destroying the best military in the history of the world, and Pete Hegseth, with the full leadership of the Commander-in-Chief, President Trump, is restoring it, and I could not be prouder about how important that is for our future of our country.
All right, so let's talk about something less desirable, and that's a lockout that seems to be a shutdown that seems to, I think in baseball, that seems to be hours away. Yesterday, evidently, Chuck Schumer was making his way to the White House, and he had a one-week extension offer, and the word got out among other Democrats, and he quickly rescinded it, did not even bring it up in the Oval Office yesterday. So you know he's scared of his own people. So what does that mean for us, and what does it mean for your government?
Well, look, let's just be very blunt about what's happening. Republicans are doing their job. We are defending the people of this country by carrying forward the policies they want us to, and Democrats are mad about it, right? Whether it's the big, beautiful bill, whether it's what we just described at the Pentagon, whether it's securing the border to a trickle, basically zero people crossing the border. Democrats are on their heels because they see us actually delivering, and they have nothing to sell. So they are scrambling for something to sell. So Schumer's quandary is that he's trying to pick a fight, but he can't figure out what to pick. So they go look at polling and they go, God, they're kicking us on everything. And the only one that's close to like 50-50 with an edge to Democrats is health care. And that's only because we haven't fully gotten there yet on the message. Because when we do, they will not have a leg to stand on. Because we are for patients and doctors, not insurance companies. And I won't go down that road, but they want to pick a fight on health care. So they're trying to shut down the government to basically subsidize insurance companies $40 billion a year, and then on top of that, reverse the great strides we made in the Big Beautiful Bill to guarantee work requirements would apply to Medicaid and food stamps and benefits, and to reverse the restrictions we put on illegal aliens getting health care. That is the current state of the Democrat Party. Now, Russ Vogt, the president, they are committed to drive forward and make sure that there's the least amount of disruption possible. We, the House Republicans, we passed a seven-week bill that would take us to November 20th. We're poised to go advance that into next year and get appropriations done if Democrats will get out of the way. But they want to play politics. We want to do our job. And if they want to sit at a table, we're happy to have conversations. But those conversations are going to be built around delivering on the things the American people sent us to do, reducing bureaucracy, reducing spending, empowering patients, empowering doctors, empowering the people, securing the border, none of the nonsense that the Democrats want to do.
I mean, let's be candid. Probably the least hyperbolic person in Washington is Senator John Thune. I mean, he just doesn't know how, even if you asked him to be, he doesn't even know how. And I love that about him. And yet, that's why I think he didn't really want the job. But this is what he was saying. He says, let me just unwind. I'm just going to lay it out to you like I'm an accountant. Let it unwind what they want to do. They bolstered up Obamacare to pay 4% off everyone's premiums during the pandemic. And now that money's just flowing in there, never rescinded, never brought back, never did. Most people don't even know it's there. Listen, cut 24.
The premium tax credit issue is something we're willing to have a conversation about. But the fact of the matter is, it is rife with waste, fraud, and abuse. It needs reforms. It is a program where the government pays, makes direct payments to insurance companies. Insurance companies get subsidies to cover more people. So through their agents and brokers, they go out and auto-enroll people, many of whom don't even know they have coverage. And of the 23 million people who were covered in the exchanges last year, 12 million never filed a claim because a lot of them don't even know they have coverage. And there's no income caps on it. There's a couple in West Virginia making $580,000 a year. It's getting subsidies from the federal government for their health care.
So besides that, he just knocked that out of the park, got rid of the hyperbole, and said that's what drives Chip Roy nuts too, right? The money that just flows through that no one takes responsibility for.
No, that's exactly right. And I'd give credit to John Thune and the Speaker, the President, for holding the line here. where Democrats want to take us. And let's just add one more layer to what the majority leader, what Thune said. The average family of four, Brian, is paying about $25,000 between themselves and their employer every year that are going into the pockets of insurance companies, enriching them. And that was plussed up with the Obamacare expanded COVID subsidies, right? That was supposed to be limited. Republicans didn't vote for it. Not one Republican voted for it. It was all driven by Democrats. And when they passed it, and it was to expire this year. They want to layer on more COVID-era subsidies,
yeah,
which we are now currently spending $218 billion a year on such subsidies, and it is driving up the price of the health care of everybody listening to your show right now. That's the fact, to enrich insurance companies. So we're on the right side of this. Schumer is starting to see it. They're panicking because they want to pick a political fight, and now they feel like we're getting the upper hand on that fight, in addition to the fact they are completely hypocritical, because 13 times under Biden, they went to the floor and they preached, we must keep the government funded. We have to fund the government with a CR. Well, here they are, and they're playing politics because they're trying to play, trying to get the political upper hand, and they're not.
And I guess we're going to see how this goes and how long it goes, because what you guys want is a clean CR, just continuing to fund the government at Joe Biden's rates. This is not your budget, right? This is not your budget. This is his budget.
That's exactly right. 100% correct. By the way, not your preference nor mine. We have appropriations bills we've passed.
Yeah.
The Senate Democrats, remember, we have to get 60 votes in the Senate for appropriations. They're blocking our ability to move good appropriations bills, but we're still working with them. We have three on the table that we're trying to get through in October, but we did a CR to keep things moving, and now they want to block it. And by the way, when you have Russ Vogt in the Office of Management and Budget, full disclosure, one of my best friends in Washington, and you have President Trump, then we can sit there with OMB and make good decisions on how the dollars are being used. So if we hold spending flat at Biden's budget, we're winning, because as the economy grows and we hold spending in check after the big, beautiful bill made reforms to Medicaid, found some savings, we can get towards getting back on path to a balanced budget, particularly if the OMB director is empowered to lay off and fire bureaucrats that are otherwise more difficult to remove. So Schumer sees a box he's walking into, and he's getting nervous about it.
So you're going to do something. You expect Russ Vogt to take this opportunity to thin out the federal government ranks permanently.
I certainly think that when you give the OMB director, who has the power to prioritize spending in a shutdown, that is to make sure we pay off our interest, right, on our debt so we don't default, make Social Security payments for our retirees, and then have to make tough decisions, he's empowered to say, look, we're going to lay off and remove workers that we think are not adding value to the average taxpayer. And that gives us more power to thin out that woke bureaucracy that has been destroying our country and get it back to doing what it's supposed to do under the Constitution and which every taxpayer expects us to do. They want workers to make sure their Social Security gets delivered. They want strong people at the Pentagon defending our country. They want an FAA that guarantees safe flights. They don't want woke workers all over the bureaucracy that are clamping down on their businesses, throwing, you know, law-abiding citizens in jail for praying and carrying out their beliefs.
Right.
So that's what I think Russ Vogt would have the power to do.
So, Congressman, I've always appreciated, I mean, you're fiery, you're direct, you really are concerned about the spending. But in the end, you try to fix problems. Like people that just make a stand and say, I'm a libertarian, or I'm not for spending any money in the military. But that's the mindset I think is needed in Washington. And I'm wondering, did you just get frustrated, or you just see it as an opportunity to run for attorney general? Because, I mean, I'm just wondering your school of thought, because it's a great position you're going for, but I also saw you as an impact lawmaker.
Well, it is a tough thing for me because I've got such great friendships in Congress, and I do believe we made a difference. And thank you for that. And I take it as a compliment that I fight as hard as I know how to fight. But you got to figure out how to land the plane.
Yes.
You got to figure out how to build coalitions.
Exactly.
And we did a good job of getting that done and working with the president. The Big Beautiful Bill is a very good bill. We've got numerous other examples. But I'm coming back to Texas because, Brian, Texas is under assault. Texas is not as safe as it needs to be. George Soros-funded prosecutors and DAs and judges are putting criminals on the street. our border is left exposed. Even, you know, President Trump is killing it, Tom Homan, Stephen Miller. But in the future, if we get a leftist president again, Texas has to be able to defend our borders. We have to be able to stop Sharia, an epic city that is being put out there near Plano, Texas, and the spreading of Sharia in Texas. We have to stop corporations that are coming in and buying up all of our regional hospitals and driving up the cost of health care. The AG has a lot of power,
yeah.
And I want to come home to Texas, because if Texas fails, Brian, we have no America. And that's why I'm coming home to Texas. I'm proud to do it. My kids are 16 and 14. I want to spend a little time with them before they get out of high school. And who knows, maybe I'll have a calling to come back to D.C. at some point. But right now I want to be in Austin, and I want to go fight for the people of Texas as the attorney general to defend our laws and defend our state against the radicals who want to take it away from us in America.
Makes sense. I only have 20 seconds, but Sharia law, why can't we just ban that in this country and just say it's incompatible with the Constitution?
Well, it is incompatible with the Constitution. I have co-sponsored Randy Fine's bill to ban its application in our courts, and I'm introducing legislation this week to have a full vetting process for anybody coming to our country, whether it's immigration, whether it's visas, whether it's green cards, that if you have any adherence to Sharia law, you should not be admitted to the United States. We need to go on offense on this, because it's in conflict with Western civilization. They literally are at war with our way of life, and we must stop it.
I hear you. Now I get it. Now I can tell people why Chip Roy is going to be Attorney General. Congressman Chip Roy, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, when we come back, I'm going to tell you, I'll wrap up a little bit more from the big speech, and the president's en route to Quantico to give his remarks to all our commanding generals and admirals. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We've had to make trade-offs and some difficult decisions. It's more of an art than a science. We have been and will continue to be judicious, but also expeditious. The new compass heading is clear. Out with the Shirellis, the McKenzies, and the Millies, and in with the Stockdales, the Schwarzkopfs, and the Pattons. More leadership changes will be made, of that I'm certain. Not because we want to, but because we must. Once again, this is life and death. The sooner we have the right people, the sooner we can advance the right policies. Personnel is policy. But I look out at this group and I see great Americans, leaders who have given decades to our great republic at great sacrifice to yourselves and to your families. But if the words I'm speaking today are making your heart sink, then you should do the honorable thing and resign. We would thank you for your service. But I suspect, I know, the overwhelming majority of you feel the opposite. These words make your hearts full. You love the War Department because you love what you do, the profession of arms. You are hereby liberated to be an apolitical, hard-charging, no-nonsense, constitutional leader that you joined the military to be.
Pete Hegseth delivering a perfect, I mean, it was a perfect speech. I would tell you, yeah, well, you know, the missed message, and I don't think it's going to go. This speech is a dream for somebody who wants to fight and win wars and be proud of their job again. And not be worried about being canceled.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcast.com.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Should our enemies choose foolishly to challenge us, they will be crushed by the violence, precision, and ferocity of the War Department. In other words, to our enemies, F-A-F-O. If necessary, our troops can translate that for you. Another way to put it is peace through strength.
Pete Hegseth, about a 45-minute address. It was flawless. It talked about a total change in culture. Massive. I can't imagine a man or woman who's upset by it to say goodbye to DEI, political correctness, the culture that was there before, because they had to listen to the lawmakers that set the tone. And the four-star general that just sat there as a placeholder, Secretary of Defense Austin, please tell me anything that he has done that's worthy of even speaking about. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us now, Dallas County Republican Party Chair, former Florida Congressman. Colonel, I love this speech, and I could imagine you giving the same speech.
Well, you're very kind, Brian. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm sitting in an airport here in Montreal, but, you know, maybe I'm the contrarian, and you may disagree with me on this, but I believe that leadership has an aura in and above itself. And I think that, you know, Pete, without a doubt, gave a resounding address. But I just think that we could have done that, and we could have tuned in to all the soldiers all across the sailors, airmen, Marines. It could have been piped to everyone that the Secretary of War is giving an address to our uniformed members of service, and not just speaking to those generals, but speaking to every single one that is out there. And you could have done that by many of an electronic means, because I think that's what we need right now, to refocus this military, to refocus its capabilities, its capacities, its ethos, the whole 9 yards. And I applaud him for delivering that message, because it was needed after Lloyd Austin, which, as you said, someone that I served with at Fort Bragg, but had an incredibly unremarkable stint as the Secretary of Defense.
I don't know what he did, except for wear a shield and a mask during the pandemic and disappear because he had some physical illnesses, and never stood up to President Biden. And as far as I know, the only thing he testified with, yeah, I was for leaving troops there, but when it didn't happen. He tells us that in the aftermath. So basically, when he said no generals were ever told me anything, he just let that discrepancy just lie there. So I want you to hear a little more from the speech. Let's listen.
As you have seen, and the media has obsessed over, I have fired a number of senior officers since taking over. The previous chairman, other members of the Joint Chiefs, combatant commanders, and other commanders. The rationale for me has been straightforward. It's nearly impossible to change a culture with the same people who helped create or even benefited from that culture, even if that culture was created by a previous president and previous secretary. My approach has been simple. When in doubt, assess the situation, follow your gut, and if it's the best for the military, make a change. We all serve at the pleasure of the president every single day.
So bringing them in there with their aides, you don't think was worth the money? Do you think there's something else going on that maybe half the people aren't buying in, and then maybe it's important to eyeball them?
Well, maybe it's important to eyeball them. I think that, again, you know, you can eyeball someone through a Zoom meeting. They can get the message. I've seen many a general officer be able to do that in my career. But the thing that a lot of people have to understand is that the two-star, three-star, four-star generals, these are not generals that are they go before a board of their peers. Last time that happens is Brigadier General, one-star, or Rear Admiral. These are political appointees, and I think it's very important for these folks to understand is that you need to realize that this is this administration's focus, and you need to be on board with that focus, or else you would not be in this position. That's clearly understood. So I think that what he has done, without a doubt, and some of the chairman and some of these other people, the C.Q. Brown, who said that we only needed 40-some-odd percent of white pilots in the Air Force, I don't understand why. It was good to show that these people cannot be around in these positions, because we are heading in a different direction in this Trump administration.
I hope they break out into smaller groups where you can have maybe, you know, two guys at a time. What's the biggest problem we have? What do we need to work on? What kind of guys and women do you have in your unit? You know, where, you know, how hard is it to get weapons? You know, all the things that you only get that maybe, guys, the door's closed, but it doesn't leave here. I hope they use that opportunity and the president speaking to them now rather than just these public addresses.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. What I would suggest happening is that they be broken down by the geographic combatant commands, which is, you know, Central Command, Pacific Command, European Command, Africa Command. And each by each, you go around and you have a roundtable discussion within those combatant commands and the subordinate units to support and provide them troops. You know, what is our task and purpose? What is our mission? Not just looking right now, but let's look at 10 to 15 years out. And I think, again, that would have been a great thing to kind of let these guys know before they showed up, so they could bring some of the planners, they could bring some of their force provider plans, and they could talk about these things. So hopefully this is, like you just said, not about rah-rah speeches, but this is really about how do we contend with the multiplicity of adversaries and enemies that we see, the narco-criminal terrorists, Islamic terrorists, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea.
So we have this Gaza deal on the plate. There's 21 axioms to it. There's 21 notes on how to end this war in Gaza. The war will immediately end. All hostages alive and deceased will be returned within 72 hours. The clock's ticking. I think we're at about 16 hours. Israel released 250 life sentences prisoners plus 1,700 Gazans. Hamas members could be given amnesty if they lay down their weapons. Hamas will not have any role in the governance of Gaza. The Board of Peace will be formed, chaired by Trump and others, including Tony Blair and other Arab leaders, for the Palestinian Authority to oversee as they try to rebuild Gaza. I can go 20 deep on this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I think that first and foremost, son, you don't give any type of conciliations toward Hamas or Islamic terrorists. You don't release anybody if they are guilty of terrorist activities. You have to operate from a position of strength because, once again, you don't negotiate with these people. You let them know that in your charter, it clearly says this. You exist for the extermination, the eradication of the State of Israel and Jews worldwide. That organization cannot be in governing authority. That organization is going to be, you know, brought to its knees, and we're not returning or reconstituting it by giving back terrorists who then, you know, where would they dissipate to? Look at what has happened with Obama releasing the five senior members of the Taliban back to Qatar, and now they're back in charge in Afghanistan. So it's about time that we put our foot down and say, we don't want you to exist, period, and stop.
Here is what Netanyahu says, now that the clock is ticking, cut to.
But if Hamas rejects your plan, Mr. President, or if they supposedly accept it and then basically do everything to counter it, then Israel will finish the job by itself. This can be done the easy way, or it can be done the hard way, but it will be done. So we prefer the easy way.
Right.
But it has to be done.
And you know what I hear? A prime minister going, they're not going to adhere to it, and I'm going to have to take action. But I'm going to let everybody know. This is a PR thing, too. They do terrible at the PR war. They'll be the first to tell you. They do terrible. You just saw that plan. Egypt, Jordan, Turkey, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Indonesia, Qatar, UAE, all signed off on this. All right? So Israel adhere to it. You know, they'll follow rules. Fine. But when the rockets start flying and this peace council, if there's assassinations, they're going to go in and finish the job. And I also never take my eye off Hezbollah because they're not defeated yet. And I want Lebanon in control of Lebanon. Think about that. Is that possible?
Well, look, Brian, let's be very honest. It's not just Hamas, as you just talked about, Hezbollah, but it's also Islamic Jihad. It's the Al-Quds, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. There are about six or seven different Islamic terrorist organizations that are tied between Lebanon, over to the West Bank, and then over to Gaza. So we need to make sure that this don't restrict and restrain ourselves to just talk about Hamas, because these guys can change their name, change whatever, change, rebrand themselves, but you still have the same problem. So I think the Prime Minister Netanyahu was very specific, and I think you have to applaud him for that. And I think that President Trump's response should be, and the United States will back you and support you when you go to finish that job. That's the clear message that has to be sent.
I hear you. I love the president's new stance when it comes to Ukraine. He's now entertaining, satisfying their request for tomahawks. Now, I know about the whole problem with escalation. I'm not stupid. We all grew up in the Cold War. We get it. We understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Remember. But we watched being cautious. And all it happens is they continue to get more confident. And they took a piece of Georgia, never let go. They've taken a piece of Ukraine, never let go. Now they want all of it. They're trying to circumvent the Moldova elections that failed for now. They've breached the borders of five NATO members. What has caution gotten us to this point?
It's gotten you nothing. It's gotten you an obtuse behavior. It's gotten you belligerence, and it's gotten you even more incessant attacks. Look, you know, President Trump sat down and thought he could have a good discussion with Vladimir Putin there in Alaska, and Putin doesn't care if you fly F-35s over his head. I mean, if they're not dropping bombs on his head, you'd care less. And you've now seen them, the incursions of drones and violation of airspace of NATO organizations. So it's time that, you know, enough with the carrot. It's time to bring out the stick, because certain people in the world only understand strength and Mike, Brian. That's just the bottom line. I think President Trump has learned that lesson in his dealings with Putin.
Didn't Turkey have a problem with the Russian jets in their airspace? And didn't Erdogan take them out? And what happened with that?
Yes.
He basically got an apology from Russia.
Yeah. That's what people realize. And look, it's just the same as, you know, you go back to the Reagan administration after the disco bombing in Berlin, or in Germany. He just went ahead and bombed Libya because it tracked right back to Libya. Didn't hear another peep out of Muammar Gaddafi. That's what people that are dictators, autocrats, that's what they understand. I mean, true autocrats, not this, you know, faux thing that these leftists are talking about here in America.
Colonel, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it. And I look forward
Always
to talking
a pleasure.
To you again. Absolutely. When we come back, we'll be able to take in calls, 1-866-408-7669. President Trump is now addressing all the military leaders in Quantico, Virginia. We're going to find out in a matter of hours if there's going to be a government shutdown. And then we're still waiting, the clock ticking on Hamas to accept or reject this offer. Right now, I understand the fighting has stopped in Gaza City. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You once used a term with me that I quoted you on, the wussification of America.
I think I said but yeah, I get it. We're on 60 Minutes, yeah.
Has the pendulum swung the other way?
I feel like it's starting to. We are definitely unapologetically masculine.
Can this bubble over to too much? When you hear toxic masculinity.
What's that mean?
You tell me.
No. You just said it. What's the definition of toxic? How can somebody be too masculine? Is that a possibility? Can you be too masculine?
You tell me.
No.
Do you think so?
The answer is hell no.
And that is a feature 60 Minutes did. I thought they did a really good job with UFC president Dana White. And they talked about how the Fertitta brothers were approached by Dana White. They graduated high school together. Fertitta's had a lot of money in their family, and they're successful casino owners. And he said, look, I've been working with the UFC, been working with boxers. We have a chance to buy the UFC. It's on death's door. We'll get it for a good price. And they did. And they were losing money. And he got a call one day, and they said, you know, I can't keep writing checks. I'm like losing my fortune. And he thought, he went to bed that night, Dana White, and thought, okay, that's it. And he got up in the morning, and one of the Fertitta brothers called him and goes, no, we're going to keep doing this. And it ended up kicking in, and with his great personality and force of personality, they launched that reality show, and UFC became this huge hit, and now it's bigger. It's one of the biggest live events in the world. It's global, and they're going to be having a fight in the UFC. They're going to build an octagon on the White House back lawn, and they did a sketch, and guess where the fighters are going to be prior to going out? They're going to be coming in from the Oval Office. It is so cool. And it only happens with Trump. And they had to do a situation where it's like, what do you like about it? They didn't give one of those, like, Donald Trump is my friend and a great guy. They didn't give him that. But they say when Trump ends an arena, he has these big entrances. And that's as close as 60 Minutes is going to get to giving Trump a salute. But I also wonder what people must think. And by the way, I did the first 4 or 5 UFCs. So I was the first octagon announcer, first one ever in the ring before the matches actually started. And when it started, you used to have, to be a champion, you'd have to win 3 or 4 fights in a night. So you win, okay, go back in the locker room. You win, go back in the locker room. And in the end, if you're still standing against some of the most lethal weapons in the world, you become champion. And Hoist Gracie won the first three or four. But I watched the whole thing grow and then see Dana White knock it into weight classes, have commissions, have rules, have rounds. That was his doing. And now women doing it, and now it's a big success. So I think it's pretty important. And Trump is loved. So I just wonder, all these people say Trump is not worthy, he doesn't deserve the position, and you know, he's got an approval rating that's low. What do they think when he enters the UFC arena? Do you know another president would enter a ring or a match and be sure he wasn't going to get booed? In fact, it was almost as big as the headliner, maybe bigger. I mean, he walked into the Ryder Cup. They were chanting his name at the Ryder Cup in New York. Now, Long Island tends to be more Republican, tends to be, but 50-50, you know, two counties there. You know, they got the Hamptons crowd too, all the way. Just go crazy for it. Now, it's a huge risk when you go public as a politician throughout the first pitch because people boo you. That's how they view you. Governor Kathy Hochul, for example, came out on the Wednesday before the tournament started. Every time they mentioned her name, everybody booed her because she's a terrible governor. Yeah, and she's not popular. But yet, you know, she wins against a Republican. But Trump brings that out, and UFC, it was pretty cool yesterday to see that. And I thought there's going to be a twist to it. There was no twist. It just is. This is a phenomenon. Real quick, I mentioned Russia before and how the president's changing the rules. He's not taking Vladimir Putin's call. They're talking about unfreezing funds, and they're talking about allowing the ATACMS and long-range weapons to be used to hit inside Russia. Mike Pompeo noticed the difference. Cut 37.
My sense is President Trump has given Vladimir Putin every chance to settle this out, to find a peaceful solution, and Vladimir Putin has rejected every one of those efforts. You saw a really diligent try in Anchorage, in Alaska, to get a good outcome for the world, and Putin just thumbed his nose. And so what I think you're seeing is President Trump saying, fine, we can do this a different way. No one should forget. And it's not a perfect parallel. He gave the Iranians a similar warning, and then we had 12 days of hell rain down on them. I think Vladimir Putin will have to come see that expanding this war will be proved to be a mistake.
Now he has to feel that way. And if Trump does kick it in and doesn't waver on this and allows Ukraine to go on the offensive, it's the only way left to get these guys to the table. We tried everything else. Tried looking incompetent. We tried looking reserved. Tried looking mature. Put out the outstretched hand of friendship. Tried to turn the page. Had a fight with Zelensky. It looked like the U.S. was fracturing. Every time that we go to deal with Vladimir Putin and show any type of acquiescence out of friendship and maturity, it goes wrong. And I'll go back to President Obama. First thing he did in office is says, I want to reset that relationship. George Bush is a terrible person. That's why he invaded Georgia. And he said, I'm going to remove the missile defense from Europe. And he did. And Vladimir Putin ends up taking Crimea. They just look at it as weakness. That's it. I wish it was different, but it's not.
Recently, we asked some people about sharing their New York Times accounts.
My name is Dana. I am a subscriber to the New York Times, but my husband isn't. And it would be really nice to be able to share a recipe or an article or compete with him in Wordle or Connections. Thank you.
Dana, we heard you. Introducing the New York Times Family Subscription. One subscription, up to four separate logins for anyone in your life. Find out more at nytimes.com/family.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. There's a lot of balls in the air today. I'm so glad you're listening to the show. We're going to have breaking news throughout the show, no doubt about it, because think about this. A government shutdown hours away, number one. Number two, you have a Gaza peace deal that's offered to Hamas. They have 72 hours to respond. What are they waiting for? Because we know that the so-called Hamas higher-ups are in Doha, over in Qatar, so they can get this right away, but they got to get the word to the warfighters who are so battered and beaten, and there's so many that have been killed. That's not the easiest thing, according to reports. but there's a comprehensive plan out there. It's 20 points. It is detailed. It's got buy-in from Egypt, buy-in from the UAE, buy-in from Saudi Arabia. It's got buy-in from Qatar, and it's got buy-in from Bibi Netanyahu. That is key. Now, I'm not forgetting about Hezbollah. I'm not forgetting that Lebanon needs to take control of their country again. That has to happen. Major sanctions, snapback sanctions have put in place over in Iran. That's good news. People are identifying who the problem is. Until there's reform, they'll always going to be a problem. But it's up to Hamas to give up their guns. And there's going to be significant amount of prisoners releases, including over 200 with death sentences, meaning they've killed before. So Israel is not without making sacrifice 2 years after October 7th, and we're coming up on that mark again. And this is a plan put forward and getting praise from the Palestinian Authority to Donald Trump, who's overseeing it with Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner. No doubt about it. This has his fingerprints all over it in a good way. So I'd like you to bring in an interview I just did with an Ambassador Oren. He's as connected as anybody in the Middle East, especially with Israel. He saw the plan. I wouldn't doubt played a role in the plan. So here is my interview that I did on Fox and Friends, and I wanted to bring it back in its entirety.
Let's bring in former Israeli Ambassador to the U.S., Michael Oren. Ambassador, you're so respected in the region, especially in this country. Tell me, what would you rate this plan 1 to 10?
Good morning, Brian. Listen, you know, before I was an ambassador, I was a history professor. You got to go back. You got to go back maybe to Teddy Roosevelt to see an achievement that would match that of President Trump and his team. Keep in mind, what has he done here? He's brought together countries, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, with European countries, countries that don't even agree on anything, much less not Israel, brought them all together to support this peace plan. I really don't know much like it. Not many examples throughout history. And it's true that it all hinges on Hamas. But you know, if Hamas says no, then at least the world knows who's responsible for blocking peace. And that's a tremendous, tremendous achievement.
Out of all the 20 bullet points, what do you think is going to be the hardest to achieve?
Well, the chief, there's only one time frame. It says that within 72 hours of accepting this agreement, Hamas has to release all the hostages, all the hostages. There's no other piece of, there's no time that says on a certain amount of date this has to happen. Now, Hamas is going to say, and I guarantee Hamas is going to say, well, we're looking at this, and we'll let you know our answer in a couple of days. And when we give you our answer, we're going to have a couple of reservations. We're going to accept it, but with reservations. And then Hamas is going to say, mark my words on this, we don't even know where all the hostages are. And it's very important that now the president and his team say to Hamas, OK, you got 24 hours to give us a response. We're not going to drag your feet on this forever. And let Hamas know that they cannot play this game, that the president will not be played by Hamas. And that was really that's number two right there. And that's the right. Key to the whole.
Michael, you're the expert, but this is the difference. If the Arab world really wants to pressure Hamas to do this plan, they can do it. That means Egypt. That means Saudi Arabia. That means Qatar. That means UAE. If they really believe in this plan and want to get it done, they could do it. Am I correct?
Well, in theory, but the Hamas is a radical Islamicist terrorist organization. These are people who would prefer to die rather than to surrender. And we're not used to dealing with people for whom death is a logical option, but that's what it is with Hamas. And yes, they can be pressured by Qatar, by Egypt, but at the end of the day, they think they're serving Allah, they want to die, and they may just choose to do that.
My hope is they understand the guy who's running Syria right now, former Al-Qaeda, and that was his mantra, and he doesn't look like he wants to do that now. Ambassador, we're all hopeful. I love the fact that so much of this is unprecedented. It gives me hope that something unprecedented could actually result. Thank you so much.
I tell you, I mean, I'm checking my watch. I'm checking all my contacts. Literally, if Hamas comes out and says, we accept, then we're going to see the biggest hostage release ever. 20 plus are alive. The bodies number up to over 40. And we remember over 250 were taken, but there's been some released, and sadly some have lost their lives already. So this is going to be dramatic. I can imagine the hostage families have tremendous hope. So I look forward to getting the latest on this. And you can't say the President of the United States is sitting on his hands on anything. Meanwhile, he's still got to worry about what is happening with the lockout. I don't think he's really worried that much about the shutdown because he feels as though all the pressure is on the Democrats. which is pretty much the case because they just want to continue to pay at the current rate while they negotiate. It's the Democrats that want concessions with no power. So when we come back, my interview with Sylvester Stallone. He's got a brand new season on the Tulsa King, another hit series, and they're already working on a fourth. We sat down to talk to him and Jay Will. I want to bring that interview to you in its entirety. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Hey, we are back. It's my privilege to tell you that I had an opportunity to talk to Sylvester Stallone and his co-star at Tulsa King, Jay Will. We didn't just talk about Tulsa King, which is a fantastic, funny series, but yet focused on the mob that's now starting another season. And they're going to start another season after that. Another success for Sylvester Stallone. Got to give him credit there. But he came by the studio to talk about the new season. And as he tells you, it's his home away from home. Here's my interview with a guy that I flat out idolize. Here it is.
We love when he's here. I hope he loves when he's here, too. Actor Sylvester Stallone, producer, I should add, too, along with his co-star. I think your initial appearance here, co-star of Tulsa King, the series, back for another season, Jay Will. Guys, welcome back to the Fox News Channel and Fox and Friends.
I finally came home.
Right. Don't you feel at home here?
Oh, I do. I'm serious. You guys, you have this environment here. It's really unique. After you do all those other, shows, come here. You come to the top of the mountain here.
That's right.
Jay, you were in the green room. I felt like the minute I saw you, I've been friends with you for 20 years.
Hey, it's the familiarity, right?
Right.
You get there, you lock in.
Because, you're the series, of course, I've seen you on television.
Right.
But, Sly, is it true he's a good guy?
No. He's a miserable bastard.
Right.
But it's...
Right.
I'm tolerant. No, actually, he's great. He's very gifted. He graduated Juilliard College acting. He's like a serious pro.
And that helps because you.
It does.
So you have this. What is America's fascination with the mob? Made you think this would work?
What is that about? It's like cowboys, outlaws.
Right.
There's something about that. I guess, can we dare to say that in each of us there's a little larceny or, like, it seems romantic, but it's certainly not. It really isn't. It's a very one-way street. Not many of them survive or whatever, but there's just as fast pirates. All the bad boys through history.
But, and with you guys in particular, I see the family aspect along with the criminal aspect, which makes it seem cool. I feel like it's a little Shark Tank. Because you are starting a business after business.
Right.
That's very good. It's a snarky Shark Tank is what it is. Yeah, that's one of the key elements, Ryan, is that how do I keep him an underdog? So we always have to invest ourselves in a much stronger villain, much more ambitious villain, and I'm always being basically assaulted East Coast, West Coast. Sometimes even within the family, you'll see a little bit this season.
Yeah. So, Jay, do you feel like Hollywood's back? I mean, from the pandemic, everyone hearing that, no one's going to the movies anymore. What about you? Do you feel like it's coming back, even if it's the streaming world?
I think it never left, it never went anywhere. I think it's just changed the medium. It changed the form of expression,
We've given up on theaters?
I can never give up on theater. It's the core of my existence. I was trained in theater classically, and I think I'll remain in the theater. Theatrical actors make the best film actors as well. You can't say the same in the other way.
I completely disagree, but we'll move on.
No. Do you think
it's on the stage? I did a lot of stagecoach.
Right. You were at the Rocky series. Was on stage, and I caught up with you there. But do you, in your back of your mind, when you're making movies, even series, are you thinking this is for the big screen, even if it ends up on the streaming screen?
Yes. I try to take a streaming show, and because I started out on features, make it cinematic. You know, try to expand it. We're always looking. Like, for example, this season, it's widescreen. In other words, it's 2:33. It's like going to a movie theater, seeing wall to wall. You can't get as tight in the close-ups, but you get the vista.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do. And I think this, people are really getting to know the characters. It's one of the top streaming shows on your channel. Mm. Do you realize it's been 40 years since Rocky IV?
You know, you are such a liar.
Right, don't 40 years.
He meant 4 years.
I mean, even though your build is the same.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No, you look great.
That's why I layer things, but thanks.
But what do you think about when you think of Rocky IV? It brings us back to that time in America, Soviet Union, U.S.
I do. You know, it's because when you're in the midst of the storm, you don't constantly focus on it. I'm always thinking that no one can write their own biography because they're in the middle of the storm. People that are observing you see what's going on in a bigger picture. But with Rocky, I'm writing a book right now on how it all happened. I'm telling you, Brian, when you go back and you analyze it, it was absolute insanity. It just couldn't happen, and it wouldn't happen again. So it's all these different odd elements of not giving up, not wanting to, or maybe just youthful ignorance. But it's that journey from arriving in New York in 1969 and then 1975, 76, just that period, was one of just... It was quite remarkable, and I think it will be very encouraging to other people that... are at that crossroad moment. And we have a few major crossroads in our life. Yeah. And one of them is, where do I go? What is my choice, my direction? And then you realize that that was the wrong one. How do you pivot? Because I had to pivot to writing because I wasn't really getting any acting jobs. So I was like, your resident mugger. That's what you're like. Got a mugger? Yeah.
Gangster, the Wanderers?
Always was.
So the thing is so interesting is I hear when people talk about acting, don't tell me you're out of work, because they say, Jay, is that if you have an iPhone, you could do a movie,
yeah, right?
Don't wait for that commercial.
Seriously.
You could go out and you could be writing something, doing something. You knew that ahead of time, but you didn't have the iPhone.
No.
Right, Jay? Well, how do you feel about
it? You know,
that?
It's funny. Ironically, my first film, It Doesn't Matter, by Josh Mann, was shot by an iPhone for 14. And filmed completely on an iPhone, no type of Steadicam.
Really?
And it was done, and it got to go to the Cannes Film Festival out of South France, I believe. And, you know, so, again, if you can make the work yourself, you can tell the story yourself. It's really no issue to it. Mm-hmm. You don't need a big old performance or, you know, right, production behind you.
And that's one of the things that there's so much to respect about you, but the one thing about you, you take action. So you're not waiting for the call on your phone. You say, I'm gonna write the movie. If you're not gonna hire me for me, I'm gonna write the movie. Oh, if you're not going to do the movie, I'm gonna find someone to finance the movie. I'm gonna star in the movie.
That's right.
And you just said that's what it is. Don't you think that is the American dream? The American dream is the opportunity to be successful. It's not the rainbow. Mm.
It is the American dream. And the first thing is you have to be really honest with yourself. Do you think you have what it takes to achieve your goal? If I said, oh, I want to be a basketball player, that's never going to happen. So it has to be within the realm of ability. And the second thing is be prepared to get demolished and stepped on and walked over and laughed at and ridiculed. That's part of the game.
Every game.
And so can you take it, the punch? That's why I wrote that scene. It's how much you can take.
That's right.
And we could cut in so many different scenes.
Yeah.
a couple of things. Not that you need another job, but you're a Hollywood ambassador for President Trump. You want to bring the TV and movie industry back to America. How you doing? I hear you guys going to Ireland, Bosnia, Australia.
Yeah, it's
when are you guys going to come back to America? Jake, can you shoot anything outside Tulsa King in New York?
I mean
in America?
Can, but, you know, I mean, it's just tough.
It's basically financial. That's what it is. It's not that these people don't want to work in America and sleep in their own beds. They want to. We used to. I loved it. I would go to work 3 miles away. Now you have to go 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 13,000 miles away. It's about money, Brian. It's just about money and how the price of living has gone up, and, you know, people have to keep up with their lifestyle. So. Yeah. That's the dilemma. So
have you been working on it? Is there anything you can do?
There's nothing you can do,
tax
really.
Tax breaks?
No. If there's some kind of government subsidy that would be overwhelming, yeah, you could kickstart things. But there's other organizations that are going to say, what about us? What about us?
Yeah.
What about us?
True.
And there's just not that much money around. It's kind of tragic because Hollywood is kind of... Hollywood, if Holly could. It's not
just
there
that happened.
Anymore.
It could have, should have.
Do you feel the same way, Jay? The Hollywood is not what it was?
I mean, you know, I'm kind of green in the game, to be honest with you. I stayed on the other side of the glass for so long, and 3 years ago I got my first chance, you know, to get on this side of it. So, you know, I can't really speak on the evolution of it as much as more as my experience. And I don't think it's – I can't say it changed because I didn't know where it came from.
Now, let me tell you, young man, as a pioneer, it's changed radically. Yeah. And I feel bad because – you know, you work so much better when you're with your family, you're at home, and you're in your home state. So I feel bad. A lot of these actors, they don't want to leave, but they have no choice.
Yeah, that's where the shooting is. You have been ahead of the game on fitness. People are talking about stem cells and all this longevity. They're talking, you're not there yet, Jay. But what about the fact they're coming along to some of the things you've been talking about, with RFK's been talking about? You encouraged by the MAHA movement, which has no age bracket?
Yes, it's so important because you are what you eat. I know it's an old adage, but you are what you eat. And if people are adding things to your everyday foods that are going to detract from your lifestyle, they got to go. And it's amazing how you wouldn't automatically think that, okay, these large conglomerates, you're right. We've been pulling this off for 40 years. We have a terrible problem, health problem in America. Maybe we should switch up. But it's tough. It's tough to break habits.
Finally, this is another success. I mean, you're starting another season on
this. This is amazing, actually.
And then is it going to be a fourth?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, we're already working on four.
You're already working on four?
Yeah. We've got Terrence Winter in the writing group, and they're working. I'm trying to get him off.
You know, like, right, I know.
He gets shot in the first scene.
Right. First scene.
But no one knows.
Right. But, you know, Sly, why didn't you wear what Jay is wearing? You could have pulled that off.
I got this from him. He wore the mesh back.
They're called pajamas.
look at these pants.
Right.
Like, you know,
it lives.
Hey, you know, these
Frankenstein lives.
Hey, I could fly out a plane and land.
I love it.
So now, Jay has a unique style. Actually, this works very well for the show, too, because he vacillates back and forth between this and trying to be sartorial. And it's good. It's a character.
It works. It is.
I don't know what it is, but no matter what character you play, I'm pulling for you. I don't know if that there's a reason behind
don't
that.
Don't make me come over and kiss.
I know. Guys, Jay Will, Sylvester Stallone, that's how you say it, right? Stallone?
Stallone.
Oh, Stallone. My bad. Stallone. I'm going to fix it in editing.
Stallone.
But fascinating talent. Best ever. Thanks so much, guys, for coming in.
You know, you haven't lost a step since the time you interviewed me on the steps of Philadelphia.
You remember so that?
I do, because your exuberance is contagious.
The first time you were shooting Rocky VI, I guess, technically, with Antonio Tarver, and that you knew my name was one of the highlights of my life.
Stop.
I swear to God. Thanks so much, guys.
Okay, thank you so much.
I always love talking to Sly, and hopefully I'll be able to get on set and see Tulsa King come together. I think sooner or later he's got to cast me in something, don't you think? And by the way, he is aging incredibly well. He could probably still box. Hey, don't move. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show on an exciting Tuesday. There's nowhere else you'd rather be. Be honest with yourself.
You're interested in it? Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and thanks so much for listening on a big day. We're monitoring everything going on Capitol Hill. Punchbowl wrote that Schumer was going to come into the White House with an offer to extend for a week while they negotiate. And when word got out, the Democrats said Schumer's going to cave again, and he panicked and didn't make that offer yesterday in the White House. But I want to bring back an interview I was able to do with Tim Green. Now, Tim Green, you might remember, outstanding first-round draft pick of the Atlanta Falcons, played 7 years there, All-American at the Carrier. You see his picture at the Carrier Dome, Tim Green, as a defensive lineman. But then he went on to become a successful lawyer. He became a successful host and a color guy on Fox for years. Then he was hosting Inside Edition for a while. I became really good friends with him over the years. He has written 42 books. He's got a brand new book out, and it is fantastic. It's focusing on an underserved area of our country, and that's boys and girls 10 to 14. and it's got a great theme of moral and character and very familiar sense of what parents go through when their kids are playing sports. So he wrote another one, but he did it because he has ALS. He wrote it with his eyes. He slowly, since 2018, since diagnosed, began to lose what everybody knows, your ability to walk and talk. And he got his speech regenerated thanks to AI. And it's just a real great story. And he actually wrote this book with his eyes, every letter with his eyes. It is amazing. He used to be able to do a book in a month or two and get him out. And now it took him 3 years. But he couldn't be prouder of it, and he wants to make it number one. But I think you need to hear and see this story. Here's my interview with Tim Green.
Tim Green's been great at everything. Unbelievable football player. He was an outstanding broadcaster. But perhaps, Tim, your most impressive lap has been the last one. You were diagnosed with ALS.
I was actually diagnosed in 2016, but was not public about my diagnosis until 2018. I often say that the NFL is the best preparation for ALS because of all the deprivation and pain and discomfort. But some good has come out of it. My faith has exploded.
Tim, it's amazing. You know, we've been friends for a long time. It's been my privilege, but to hear your voice. Tell us about how you communicate and how you sound even better now than you did before.
I'm using eye tracking technology where I select each individual letter with my eyes. Then, for my voice, I am using 11 Labs, which converts the text into my real voice.
As co-founder and CEO, what you were able to do is amazing, helping generate Tim's voice. Tell me how you're changing lives with your voice technology.
We are building the most comprehensive AI audio platform. A lot of people that lost their voice used 11 Labs to recreate their voices and create narrations, create voiceovers, and communicate with their loved ones. And Tim was one of the people that incredibly shows what you can do.
What have these years been like for you?
I have slowly deteriorated physically over the last 9 years. Now I am a quadriplegic. I had a tracheostomy in 2019, and that meant that I could no longer eat or drink or smell. However, my Christian faith has grown inversely proportional to my physical collapse, which is reflected in my new book.
For you personally, what's been the hardest part?
I can't get over the fact that I can't hug my wife and kids, throw my grandchildren up in the air, or tickle them until they're laughing hysterically. However, I once thought living with a trach wouldn't be a life worth living. Boy, was I wrong.
And part of the reason why he's living with the trach, Troy, is you.
Yeah, I just told him that what makes him him is his familyness, his love, his caring, his support for all of us. And at that point, too, I was a really young father. I had an under one-year-old, and I said to him, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm going to need your help. I'm going to have a lot of questions.
How do you stay so positive? I think the whole country wants to know.
I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I focus on what I can do, not what I can't do. And thankfully, I can still do a lot. When I began losing mobility, I thought my boating days were over. We now have a custom-sized boat. The grandkids climb all over me as we cruise the lake.
Every time we're out in the boat, he's always got the biggest smile. I think he likes it more than the grandkids.
You also have a podcast. You call it Nothing Left Unsaid, and the way it starts is significant.
First of all, this is my voice. I'm Tim Green, and I have ALS. This podcast is not about ALS or living with disabilities. From triumphs to trials, we'll explore the extraordinary in the ordinary. The inspiration for starting the podcast came from Troy.
He wanted everyone to know that, you know, don't feel sorry for him. He's got a lot of stuff he can do, a lot of stuff he's working on, a lot of stuff he's still doing. He didn't want people to kind of write him off.
Your guest list is phenomenal. I mean, you got Charles Barkley.
To be open and honest when things are not perfect takes a lot.
Malcolm Gladwell.
For the record, I did not trounce you in that debate. As I recall, you held your own.
The great Will Cain is on there, Tiki Barber.
After we recorded the first one, I loved it and we just kept going. I had two conditions. I wanted to be able to honor my faith in every episode, and we use the platform to raise money and awareness for ALS.
Yeah, and Tim, I know you like helping people. You're helping other people with the same diagnosis.
Raising over $10 million for ALS research at Mass General has been incredibly humbling. Every dollar represents a step closer to answers, to treatments, and ultimately to a cure.
I mean, how many patients with ALS can do a podcast, can write a book, can be the leading rainmaker in a law firm?
I think just one, Tim Green.
Is it helping the whole process of trying to find a cure?
Yes. He's helped in so many ways. One is just by showing other people living with ALS that you can live with ALS. Then through the Tackle ALS and fundraising, and then by himself being part of research. When I started, there were so few people studying this illness and caring for people, and now it's a global effort to conquer ALS.
So what is your message for people who are facing similar health journeys that you are?
I would tell them it's not over till it's over. In other words, no one gets out of this place alive, and you've got to make the most of your time here, however short or long that is. A huge part of that is embracing your spiritual journey. God loves us, and He has a forgiving nature.
You've got a brand new book. You've already been a number one bestseller multiple times. What do you hope readers, especially young readers, take away from the new book?
Rocket Arm, at its core, explores friendship, loyalty, and the troubling trend of adults interfering in kids' sports, and the fundamental values of kindness, tolerance, honesty. It gives parents and grandparents a chance to talk with kids about the life of Jesus.
How difficult is it to write with your eyes?
Rocket Arm took the better part of 3 years to finish. On a good day, I type somewhere between 3 and 10 words per minute. It's a slow process that requires a lot of patience. But the truth is, I would write with my toes if I had to, as long as I can keep writing. The process is a challenge, but turning more kids into readers is worth every second.
So, Tim, out of everything you've done, what are you most proud of?
I know it sounds like a cliche, but the thing that I am proudest of is my family. As a family, we have faced challenges, but we have also had so many special and memorable moments over the last 9 years. One of the biggest silver linings to my ALS diagnosis is my family rallying around me. I'm also overjoyed that God gave me another chance to get it right.
Hope you really enjoyed that. We're going to post it online so you get a chance to see his family and how they're rallying around him. All right, you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back with more in just a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. So glad you're there. We're going to be talking with Stuart Varney and FBN shortly. We do want to talk about what's happening yesterday. And I don't know how many mulligans you're going to give this guy. But Zohran Mamdani, I had no idea how he won the nomination. And then you look at his background, you see he doesn't like cops, he doesn't like Israel, he doesn't like Netanyahu, doesn't like capitalism. You would think that's going to give somebody, just some niche candidate that gets 2%. So we find out in 2020 he calls cops racist, wants to send therapists out to every domestic dispute, wants to cut money out of the NYPD. So he was asked yesterday, you know, about it. And he asks, well, you know, what about, do you have to apologize to the NYPD? He goes around in circles. He doesn't. And they ask, you know, what about Jews? What about, you know, your track record? We won't condemn Hamas as a terror organization. I mean, is this a red flag or what? So this is why Governor Cuomo, who wants to be Mayor Cuomo, after Eric Adams dropped out on Sunday, he's got a brand new tact. He's going to start attacking this, I think. He's got two debates, perhaps, if he shows up. He sleptwalked through the others. And if he shows up and just points this stuff out, I mean, this is so easy. Because if you don't like Israel, you don't like, seem to have no track record of a positive relationship with Jews, and then you vilify cops, that includes their families, retired cops. So many end up living in the city and the families of active cops, the police academy. Think about that. And then when you have an opportunity to say, yeah, in 2020, I was caught up in the hoopla around the George Floyd riots. You can't really fault me for that. So instead, he said, yeah, that was in 2020, but he does not apologize for what he said. And you know why? This is the sad part. I think that he feels that most of the 400,000 people and most of the people that give him 43% of the vote feel that if he says something positive about cops, about Jews, about Israel, he loses them. But if he actually wants to be a good steward of a city, you would never even mention this stuff, and it was in your track record. You would have gone out of your way to explain it. We'd talk about how you've changed. But that's not the case right now. So Cuomo is going to go at it. And you know essentially what they're going to say? I may not be perfect, but I'm better than him. Meanwhile, Curtis Sliwa says he's not going anywhere. He stays in double digits. He has been third the whole time. I don't think many Curtis Sliwa voters would go to Cuomo. I think they would just stay home. The Eric Adams was the big one. But let's listen in to Stuart Voney.
10 seconds are up. Magically, amazingly, Brian Kilmeade will appear right there on the right-hand side of the screen. You've got about 3 seconds to go. Two and one. And there he is. Kilmeade time. All right, Brian. UFC's chief executive officer, Dana White. He was on 60 Minutes. He defended the UFC's unapologetically masculine attitude. Watch this.
You once used a term with me that I quoted you on, the wussification of America.
I think I said but yeah, I get it. We're on 60 Minutes, yeah.
Has the pendulum swung the other way?
I feel like it's starting to. We are definitely unapologetically masculine.
Can this bubble over to too much? When you hear toxic masculinity,
what's that mean?
You tell me.
No, you just said it. What's the definition of toxic? How can somebody be too masculine? Is that a possibility? Can you be too masculine?
You tell me.
No.
Do you think so?
The answer is hell no.
Okay, Brian, address that. You can't be too masculine. What do you make of that?
I agree, Stuart. Can you be too feminine? No. Can you be too masculine? No, that's who you are. Well, that guy's a guy's guy. You'll hear that expression all the time. But now if you said that in the past, like, uh-oh, what are you saying? Because in society, just a few years ago, that was a bad thing. But you know what? Dana White always felt the same way. The people that go to the UFC always acted the same way. You may assume that you don't want part of that crowd. Now everybody wants into that crowd. We have sobered up. It's like we've come out of a drunken stupor. And we looked around and we say, stop with the cancel culture. Stop denying that there's no difference between a man and a woman. Of course there is. And it filters down to the ultimate man sport. I mean, this guy's also doing a slap fighting league. You can't get any more masculine than that. Hit somebody as hard as you can. And if they can stand, they win. Crazy. but he feels it's going to be even more successful than UFC. But I loved it. I thought it was a good feature. They even mentioned that Donald Trump is popular on 60 Minutes when it comes to the UFC crowd. They actually showed his walkout. I was amazed.
That's a breakthrough. That's a real breakthrough on 60 Minutes for sure. You spoke with rapper 50 Cent, as in 50. You spoke to him this morning. Here's a clip. Watch this.
We have that point in 2000 when he gets shot. Mm-hmm. You have to come back. Yeah, did you ever have doubts at that moment?
At that point, I wasn't thinking about a CD.
You were surviving.
Yeah. Are you going to recover? And you look and you go, well, what am I going to do? Like, the record company's not answering the phone anymore. Everything's changing. And then it's like, you got to figure out how to do it on your own. We're in a different climate, so I couldn't do the things the new artists could do. I had to trick bootleggers into thinking that what I was to steal it so they could reproduce it and distribute it for me, because there was no other outlets.
But that's the resourcefulness.
Brian, you did the interview. What else did he have to say?
A couple of things. Stuart, he's a man after your own heart. Don't complain about your circumstances. Get it done. That's what he was like. He got shot 9 times. He's on the cusp of releasing his first album. Starts in 96, 2000, ready to go. He gets shot 9 times. Miraculously, he survives. But when he gets out, they go, we're not going to touch you. So Eminem steps in and says, I think you're great, and releases the album. And from there, it's been, hard work, but he's been rocketing up the charts in music. He said, that's not enough. I want to produce. That's not enough. I want to act. That's not enough. He wants to host this series on Fox Nation. He says, I've always liked the crime stuff. You know, he's friends with President Trump. He doesn't want to get political, but he says, I've always been friends with him since the Apprentice days. I always love people that are successful in real estate. He wants to do the same thing. He's absolutely a charming guy. And he just talked about how he's going to release a new movie called Street Fighter. And I go, he goes, yeah, I play a boxer in it. I had to lose 30, 40 pounds. Now, to lose 30, 40 pounds from the guy that hosted the series on Fox Nation, we look great. He's down to 200 pounds. I mean, that's the discipline of this guy. He said, I don't care about circumstances. You got to overcome. Isn't that the American attitude?
It's a great guy. It really is. That's exactly what we need. Brian Kilmeade, I regret to say we're out of time, but thanks very much for being with us. We'll see you again real soon.
Still ahead. And of course, Fox Nation's got that series. And He says, I looked at Donnie Wahlberg, and he was hosting a crime series. He says, I love this crime novel. He goes, I love these crime stories when I know they're real, and I try to figure them out before the show figures them out. And then when I explained that to my managers, they went and found this job. And I said, you're going to be able to do another series? He says, absolutely, we're coming back next year. But he wants to do more of it instead of the wraparounds. I think he wants to get into the actual crime and talk to the victims and get more involved, which I'm sure most people, he can make a lot of things happen because of that. So that's pretty cool. That happened a little bit earlier today. He's only doing one appearance, and he chose Fox and Friends. In fact, at some point, we'll probably bring back the interview. Very few people get a chance to interview him, especially in news. This has been an interesting week because we've already had, was it last week or this week that we had? No, it was last week we had Jeremy Piven of Entourage. And our producer just noticed that he was, our booker just noticed that he was doing stand-up in the area. So they reached out. He said, of course I'll come by. So he came by using observational humor. They tried to cancel him a while ago. Great guy. And maybe this guy will come by. And this is how driven he is. And you could appreciate this. So when he came in, I go, you should do this show more. He goes, I love it. I could do the show and I still have my whole day ahead of me. So instead of saying, I can't get up, I work till 2 a.m, it's like, no, I want to be able to put in 10 hours. I'd love to be able to do a show first. So I appreciate that. He's from Queens. He had absolutely nothing. He had zero money. And he just said, well, okay, I got to fix this situation. And it's pretty gritty. And I know there's this one story I was looking up trying to prepare for the interview. And they said that I think Dr. Dre was producing this song and the song was upbeat and it was happy. He said, you cannot cut this song. He goes, because people look at you as one way from the streets, what you went through, being shot, all that stuff. And he goes, look, I'm two people. You know, I know where I came from, but I also have another side, which led to his whole acting and the theatrical side, too. So you're not going to get that guy upset about anything but happy about America 250, if you ask me. Don't forget, I get to meet you in person in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, coming up on November 1st. Go to BrianKilmeade.com, streaming on Fox Nation 2. My chance to bring history to life as we celebrate our country's anniversary.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Final hour of the day on this Tuesday, man. What a day we've had. I mean, on the morning show, I had a chance to talk to 50 Cent, who's doing a new feature. He's got a new series on Fox Nation. What a great guy. Remarkable story. Doesn't want to get political, but is really good friends with Donald Trump. He says they've always been friends. Thought that was interesting, but then you have we have a shutdown of the country again. The economy, this is embarrassing. I mean, what is going on here? Think about it in the big picture. I mean, what are people thinking on the outside? Again, government's got to shut down services, paycheck's going to have to stop. I don't see any Hail Mary being done in the next few hours. And then Pete Hegseth gave what I thought was a pitch perfect speech, delivered flawlessly, about the focus of the as Secretary of War, what our warfighters should be doing. He's talking about even generals got to get in shape. 2 fitness tests a year. No more. It's all meritocracy. Don't tell me about gender. Don't tell me about nationality. Don't tell me about sexual preference. It doesn't matter. We're killing all that woke garbage for at least 4 years. And if J.D. Vance or Marco Rubio or Ron DeSantis win next time, we got another 4 years. And I don't say this as a Republican or Democrat. I'm saying this as an American. We need warfighters to win. On the other side, the guy that really knows this is Kid Rock. He every time he talks, he bleeds red, white, and blue. Good friends with the president. I caught up with him, and I asked him about bringing Bill Maher to the White House and bringing the country together, especially in the wake of the Charlie Kirk shooting. I want you to hear this.
Anyone who's bought a concert ticket in the last decade, maybe 20 years, no matter what your politics are, knows that it's a conundrum. You buy a ticket for $100. By the time you check out, it's $170. You don't know what you can charge for, but more importantly, these bots. You know, they come in to get all the good tickets to your favorite shows you want to go to, and then they're relisted immediately for sometimes a 400 or 500% markup.
It's got to stop. Kid Rock in the Oval Office a few months ago calling for reform when it comes to ticket prices. Now a breakthrough lawsuit. The FTC just filed it against Ticketmaster and Live Nation over illegal ticket resale tactics, jacking up prices for you and I. People can't afford to see shows that they love and artists want their fans to come. So how do we solve this thing? Joining us now to talk about the lawsuit and what could change is the music legend himself, great friend of the show, Kid Rock. Great to see you, Bob. This is what you see is a long time coming. What do you hope comes out of this?
Well, I hope that us as artists, as athletes, as artists, whatever, can get the tickets at the prices we set into the hands of the fans. It's become ridiculous. And I'll tell you one thing before all the Johnny Do-Gooders on their computers start to chime off about capitalism. I'm a capitalist to the bone. I'm sure you are as well. These people, these bad actors, whether it's the ticket companies like Ticketmaster, other ones, brokers, scalpers, the bots, whatever, they hide behind the guise of capitalism. If it was capitalism, I'd be all for it. It's ridiculous. I'm not saying that some of the fans don't hold a bit of responsibility in going out and paying some of these prices. But there's so much money in this business, in sports, in entertainment to be made that it's gotten so out of hand and it's bad actors. It's not even the bots sometimes. I know people who have quit their jobs at Goldman Sachs and they set up accounts, you know, and they buy tickets all over the world and resell them. And all they're doing is taking it out of the hands of working class people. You have these organizations that get 1,000 accounts and they get multiple credit cards and they go on and they get all the tickets and then they resell them. And the real problem is people like Ticketmaster. If you buy a ticket and you go to a concert, you are not Ticketmaster's best client. You would think, wow, I'm a great client. No, you're their worst client. Because if they get that ticket on their secondary reselling market, not only do they make a nice percentage off it again, they make those another exorbitant fees that they charge, which is crazy in itself. I'm on a tangent, sorry, but it's like, okay, what's the difference? What's the difference in work between if you buy a $10 ticket or you buy a $1,000 ticket? The way they deliver that ticket to you or whatever they do, what's the difference? They charge a percentage on that. Guess what the artists get, by the way? Goose egg.
Right. And you know, Bob, what they do to you guys, too, they don't give you enough for your music, so you have to go out and do live shows, and that's fine. It at least lets you get the revenue that you earned. You are the indispensable part. You are the attraction. And they say, estimated, Ticketmaster earns. Consumer spending is $82.6 billion. But they also, they take in Ticketmaster fees and collect fees of $16.4 billion. Tell me where that goes. So we got to solve this. Go ahead.
Isn't it ironic that, you know, I've gone down this deep dive looking at these things, and we're looking at their, you know, yearly earnings. Several years ago, they used to report their secondary markets. Ticketmaster did. It was over $1 billion, their secondary resell. So why would they want to stop the bots or the bad actors or the scalpers? They don't. Of course, they're going to act like they do. And I asked a you know, I was sitting with a guy that's very good at tech in a UFC fight, Elon Musk. And I asked him point blank, I go, Elon, can people, you know, these big companies, can they stop these bots if they want to? And he looked at me and said, yes. Wow. I'm like, well, that makes sense why they wouldn't want to when they're making $1 billion or so in that year. But they don't put that in their earnings reports anymore. They just bake it in to ticketing as a whole. So the shenanigans that have been going on for decades is just it's garbage. It needs to be fixed.
It's got to stop. We got to fix the music industry so we get more artists like you getting paid what they deserve and get the fans paying a price that they can afford. So let's talk about something else. You also have a passion for politics, but you have this passion of bringing people together. We saw that case in point when you told Bill Maher, a very liberal, successful talk show host on HBO, why don't you go meet President Trump? He did. They hit it off. And I think it was a big plus. Also, I saw something the inverse of that. Rob Reiner tell Bill Maher the exact opposite. Listen to this.
But the idea of we don't talk to you when we don't even have the power? Of course you have to talk to people. I mean, there was an article somebody wrote. He was...
But here's the thing. You're right. But here's the thing. Let's say we're going to have that argument. You're going to try to talk to somebody and you have a point of view. The other person has a point of view. Before you have the exchange, you have to agree on certain facts.
No, you don't. You can't. Once you start down that road.
Well, no.
But it's like these are, you just I'm have to saying, talk to people.
No, you talk to people. But if somebody says 2 + 2 = 4 and the other guy says, no, it's not. How do you begin the discussion?
Because it's because Rob, that's a slippery slope.
And he went on to try to convince him to talk to people, and they both agree on their politics. You're shaking your head. Why?
I mean, this guy, Rob Reiner, like, what the epitome of an opinionated Hollywood. I mean, this guy knows zero about middle America. Zero. He's lived in that bubble like so many of these goofballs for eons. And you know what? I wonder if they know this. I wonder if Hollywood knows this. They were so cool. We, you know, all of us looked up to actors and things like that when we were growing up. I wonder if they realize how uncool they are these days now that most middle-class Americans have seen behind the curtain and realizes there's no big wizard behind there. They're just a bunch of midgets.
I think it's a great point. I just think people got to talk if people are going to come together, and you live that every day.
Absolutely.
And you hang out with a lot of people that don't vote the way you vote, and it doesn't matter. It's just one thing, one part
of
your life.
By the way, I can call those names I can to Rob Reiner, and that's fine. And guess what? I would still invite him to break bread with me and sit down. And he could call me something back, and we could sit down, and we can find some common ground. Right. I guarantee it.
Kid Rock, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
That's Kid Rock. What a great guy. And he's always there for us. And by the way, he's a great business person. When we come back, we have a lot more show left, including the ambassador from Moldova. The significance of their election cannot get enough attention. We're going to put that front and center when we come back. You are listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We were a little bit threatened by Russia recently, and I sent a submarine, nuclear submarine, the most lethal weapon ever made. Number one, you can't detect it. There's no way. We're 25 years ahead of Russia and China in submarines. Russia's actually second in submarines. China's third, but they're coming up. They're coming up. They're way lower in nuclear, too, but in 5 years, they'll be equal. They're coming up. And you don't have to be that good with nuclear. You could have 1/20th what you have now and still do the damage that would be, that'd be so horrendous.
So that is President Trump just giving a long speech right after Pete Hegseth knocked it out of the park with the new stance with the Secretary of War. Joining us now is the ambassador to the U.S. from Moldova, Vile Kolmininsky. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Brian.
So, Ambassador, a lot of people are looking in Eastern Europe these days, and they're watching Russia incur in the space of Romania, of Poland, of Belgium, of the Baltics. We saw Estonia. And then they're trying to infiltrate, by almost all reports, your election. But tell everyone what happened with your election in Moldova as you aspire to join the EU.
So essentially, Russia tried to keep the Republic of Moldova within its orbit. And in order to do that, it interfered massively in the recent parliamentary elections in the country. And Russia was backing a coalition of communists, socialists, and Antifa against center-right governing party. So that's what essentially happened. But you could have seen this played all over again and again in Warsaw-Pact countries during the Cold War, when Poland, Hungary, Czech Republic, Romania, Bulgaria wanted to make the voice of their people heard, but the Soviet Union was trying to keep them in their orbit all the time. The same story is now being played over with countries around the former Soviet Union. So in that election, Moldova, through a fair and democratic vote, sent a very clear message that, you know, it is a sovereign, independent country, and that it is the people of Moldova who will decide their own destiny, and that Russia is not really welcome.
What is it like living under Soviet/Russian occupation and influence?
Well, it's something that, you know, that is impossible to describe. It means that, you know, your people can essentially be taken over you know, at night, taken up and shipped literally to Siberia. It means, you know, constant fear. It means constant reprisal. And, you know, in this election, as expected, Russia tried to do everything. Bribery, money, threats, hoax, subterfuge, intimidation, propaganda, the entire toolbox. But it actually had the opposite effect, because Moldova, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, has tasted freedom, has tasted democracy. And I think that after this election, when Moldova sent a very clear message that it is going to decide its own destiny, Russia lost this country for a very long time, if not forever, just as it lost Ukraine. You can't really buy away people's freedom, can you?
So you're not a member of NATO. You're a small country on your own. Do you fear Russia just flat out invading like they did Georgia, like they're trying to do in Ukraine, like they did in Ukraine, being pushed back?
No, because we have very strong allies, including the United States. And the United States has been very helpful in strengthening Moldovan institutions and Moldova's ability to resist. And I would like to remind you that the first administration of President Trump was very helpful in preventing destabilization in Moldova. So essentially, it played a role of a mediator, making sure that political processes in Moldova go peacefully and that Moldova plays a role of regional stabilizer. Today, you know, a very important point is that the foreign policy of this administration essentially keeps Russia at bay, because, you know, before invading any other countries, Russia is really thinking, what is Washington going to say? So this deterrence is crucial to us.
So I love the president changed his stance. He was giving Putin a shot, trying to start fresh, just trying to get to everybody to stop fighting and get some type of deal done. Can't happen. Vladimir Putin seems to look at all that outstretched hands as weakness. Now, what do you think of the president's new posture when he's considering giving them tomahawks and allowing them to go inside Russia's border with our attack-em long-distance rockets, missiles?
I think that the president is absolutely right in pushing for peace in Ukraine. It is really time for Russia to talk peace seriously, as the president has emphasized many, many times. And, you know, essentially, Russia is stalled and it's not making any meaningful strategic gains. We're looking at wanton destruction and we're looking at death. Ukraine is holding firm and it will hold firm. And so that war needs to stop. And the efforts of the United States to stop that war are really, really welcome. And I think they are great. And nobody, of course, would benefit more from peace than the Republic of Moldova. And, you know, finally, blessed is the peacemaker. So, and what we are trying to do right now, we're trying to establish a very strong partnership. We've already had a very strong partnership with the United States of America. You know, we've become independent in terms of energy supplies. We no longer buy energy, gas, or electricity from Russia, and we're opening up opportunities for U.S. companies in our markets. We have a 750-mile-long border with Ukraine, and, you know, in terms of Ukraine reconstructions, we can play a very important role in that. So it's not a charity. It's a partnership, you know, that we want to continue.
Ambassador, the ambassador of Moldova is joining us now. Ambassador, for people, and the president said this in the past, and I thought he was wrong, and I'm not sure he really believes it, but he says, look, this is not our war. This is Europe's war. What should the American people know about the Ukraine conflict that was started by Russia that really does affect our national policy and security?
Those wars tend to spill over. And, you know, then they draw in a lot of other countries and they create a geopolitical imbroglio, which becomes very difficult to address. So it is much easier to do that before it actually spreads. And I think that, you know, the president is trying to do just that. And his efforts, you know, have been very successful in a lot of other instances. Look, for example, at Armenia-Azerbaijan. That was a brilliant peace deal, which was achieved by President Trump. And, you know, that after hundreds of years to do that is really impressive. And, you know, we can cite a lot of other peace deals that have been achieved. But I think that is a really, really good example.
Well, why does Vladimir Putin not see the downside to invading these countries? Why is he so determined, instead of building up his country, to invade other countries?
Brian, it's probably going to take us about 2 weeks to really discuss that question, you know, because that's a question that bedevils a lot of countries around Russia. You know, it probably has to do with domestic reasons that, you know, Vladimir Putin cannot stop. because, you know, he will not face a very content public domestically, you know, because then how are you going to explain to your people back home that, you know, you've launched this massive effort, that there was so much death and destruction for what? Because Russia, let's look at it, it hasn't really made any meaningful strategic gains in Ukraine. So those wars tend to become self-perpetuating. And the sooner Russia understands that there are no more strategic gains to be made, the sooner the war will stop.
So we know that the right people won the election. Do you worry about any type of infiltration when it comes to the election and the electronic, any type of cyber attack that could affect the results?
Oh, that has already happened. So, you know, there has been massive cyber attack, intimidation, propaganda, and sort of, you know, but the election was still won by the center-right governing party. And I think it really helped that Russia was backing up this coalition of communists and socialists and Antifa, and sort of, you know, that was not really much of a credible alternative. And you cannot really buy people's votes. So institutions have become a lot stronger, and that has happened to a great extent thanks to the support from the United States of America. So, you know, I think Moldova will continue to resist, and Moldova has resisted.
Awesome.
It is, for all intents and purposes, our second Independence Day.
Ambassador Komeninski, thanks so much. He's the ambassador to Moldova. He's right here in the U.S. Thanks so much, Ambassador. Glad the good guys won. Michael Goodwin's also a good guy. He's next. Don't move.
This week on the Fox True Crime Podcast, I'm joined by retired FBI Special Agent Stacey Perkins as she discusses the Bureau's Innocent Images Initiative and the many child predators she has helped to bring down.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You know, they say give us 45 days. We've had, since March, we've had 45 days and 45 days and 45 days and 45 days. We asked to meet earlier, they didn't want to. So we think when they say later, they mean never. We have to do it now, first because of the timing issue, and second because now is the time we can get it done.
That is Chuck Schumer, the minority leader, trying to act tough in front of his guys. We heard that he was going to walk into that meeting yesterday in the Oval Office with the president, Hakeem Jeffries, Speaker Johnson, Senator Thune, and he was going to say, well, about a one-week extension, we'll continue to talk about X, Y, and Z. And when word leaked out that he was going to look for a mini extension, they started saying Schumer's got to go and started with the resentment. So he quickly, this according to Punchbowl, made sure that that was not brought up in the Oval Office. So they had a spirited exchange. At which time, all you should know is this. One is continuing resolution, everything be paid the same exact way while they work on getting a budget and the appropriations bills passed, or you just have immediate shutdown. What they want is USAID back put in place. They want NPR financed again. And they want the subsidies that were put in place during the pandemic that inflated Obamacare to an unaffordable way, and I'm going to let you hear what John Thune described it, they want that all to stay in place. Why? This is an extension of the current budget levels, which is Joe Biden's budget. Michael Goodwin, New York Post columnist, joins us now. Michael, who's going to pay the price for this? Because I think a shutdown's inevitable.
Good morning, Brian. Look, I think you've summarized it very, very well, and the idea that essentially, Democrats want to return to, you know, the previous president. And Donald Trump was not elected to be a caretaker for Joe Biden's policies and budget. And I think that it's very unlikely that this is going to lead Trump to cave. I don't see it. I mean, some Republicans may waver, but I don't think very many in Congress will waver. So I don't think the Democrats will ever have the votes of a majority in either house. Look, the public spoke very loudly in the 2024 election. It did not want this level of federal spending. It wanted cuts. And the idea of the migrant health care issues, which of course is a very big part of all of this. And the voters were very clear. They wanted border security. It was a big vote for America First policies. And I think all of these things are still popular. And I think sometimes there's so much coming out of Washington that it can be confusing even to those people trying to pay attention, because there's a welter of information and misinformation and the media manipulation. But I think it is hard sometimes to keep your eye on the ball. But fundamentally, this is about, do you favor Donald Trump's changes that he ran on and that he was elected on to spending and to priorities, or do you want to go back to the Democrats? Because don't forget, Donald Trump's tax cut only works. That's the way of reducing the budget deficit if that tax cut takes effect and the economy booms. If you go back to the higher levels of spending, you are nullifying the tax cut, the impact of the tax cut on the economy, and so then you have higher taxes for longer. So I think it's an important fight, but I think it's hard to get the word out to a lot of people.
I hear you, Michael Goodwin, our guest. Michael, I just want you to hear, here's Senator Thune, who's got to be the most logical person in Washington. Cut 25.
Part of this is that the base Obamacare program is not going to be affected. What's going to be affected is the enhancements that the Democrats added when they had the majorities. So we're willing to have that conversation, but you got to do that. You know, you can't do that in the context of a hostage-taking situation, which is where we are right now.
So that's essentially it. He's like, look, you're trying to add this. You try to undo the big, beautiful bill. You didn't like it. You lost an election.
Right.
But to say that Republicans control everything and they're choosing to shut the country down is wrong, because anybody knows you need 60 votes.
Yeah, and the whole shutdown politics, I think, has played itself out. I don't think it's the bogeyman that it used to be. I mean, we've had shutdowns. No one can even remember when they were, how long they lasted, or what impact it had. I mean, I remember one of them, what, you saw more trash around some of the monuments in Washington for 3 days or something, or some of the monuments were closed. But by and large, these are not explosive events that fundamentally change the country. They are minor detours while the parties fight it out. But I don't think, you know, the media is going to blame the Republicans. Of course the media is always going to blame the Republicans. They'll blame the Republicans even if there is no shutdown. So I just think those scare tactics don't really, they're not effective anymore, and they were in the way they were perhaps a decade ago.
All right, so yesterday, an amazing 20-point plan to bring peace in the Middle East. I'll give you an idea. Israel will release 250 life sentence prisoners, plus 1,700 Gazans, I guess people that have been captured during the conflict. The members could give an amnesty if they put down their guns. Hamas will not have any role in the government of Gaza. Israel not occupy or annex Gaza. There'll be a board of peace chaired by President Trump, including former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair. A possible path to Palestinian self-determination and statehood if they hit certain points. So it goes 20 deep. So the question is, will Hamas accept it? Because Israel has, so has Egypt, so has the UAE, Jordan, Turkey, Pakistan, Indonesia, Qatar. So listen to Benjamin Netanyahu if they don't. Cut to.
But if Hamas rejects your plan, Mr. President, or if they supposedly accept it and then basically do everything to counter it, then Israel will finish the job by itself. This can be done the easy way, or it can be done the hard way, but it will be done.
So there is 72 hours for them to do it. Now, Ambassador Oren said they're going to delay, they're going to say they can't find all the hostages, and he thinks that this thing is not going to see the light of day. I'm a little bit more optimistic. What about Michael Goodwin?
I tend to agree with Oren that Hamas, Brian, I believe Hamas cannot and will not sign its own death warrant. I know Netanyahu talks about it, that Israel will take them all out. But I tend to believe that Hamas thinks it's crossed the Rubicon on that. That it's, the war is over. Hamas has survived. and it's going to continue to survive. And as long as it does, Gaza will always be a tinderbox. It will always be fertile ground for the Islamist desire to kill Israelis. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's any way to stop Hamas short of going back to the war. And right now, there's no appetite for that. I think even in Israel, which is now more focused than ever on the hostages. So this is a perilous moment. I tend to believe that Hamas will stall in the hopes that it can survive. And I think that's all that matters to Hamas, is its survival. You know, a million people could die in Gaza and Hamas wouldn't care. It would just count that as the price that the world has to pay. But I think that Hamas will not voluntarily give up the guns.
So I love Pete Hegseth's speech today. 45 minutes in front of all the generals. The president spoke afterward. But Hegseth was right on the money, delivered flawlessly. And I want to give people at home a chance to hear it if they missed it. He hopped it did about 8:15 in the morning. Let's listen.
As you have seen, and the media has obsessed over, I have fired a number of senior officers since taking over. The previous chairman, other members of the Joint Chiefs, combatant commanders, and other commanders. The rationale for me has been straightforward. It's nearly impossible to change a culture with the same people who helped create or even benefited from that culture, even if that culture was created by a previous president and previous secretary. My approach has been simple. When in doubt, assess the situation, follow your gut, and if it's the best for the military, make a change. We all serve at the pleasure of the president every single day.
So I just thought he went on to say, we're done with the woke BS. Forget about it. It's all about meritocracy. Don't tell me a woman, man. They got the same standards. If the women can do it, fantastic. If they can't, they're out. Not out of the military, but out of that mission or special forces or whatever it is. Trim your beards. Get ready for boot camp the old-fashioned way. It's supposed to be a stressful situation. And you generals, get into shape. A lot of you generals are fat. Nobody wants to see a fat general. I loved it. I absolutely loved the speech.
Look, it is pure Pete, right? I mean, you know him well, yeah. Brian, from his time at Fox. I mean, he does have a warrior mentality, and he wants the armed forces to be in that same frame of mind, not trigger happy, but ready. And I think that's a sense that his sense, and I basically agree with him that the military didn't just get fat, but it got reticent. It got woke in the sense that it was concerned about pronouns and racial diversity and all of those sorts of things. And all of these things clouded the commitment to the mission, which is to protect and defend the United States and always to be ready to do that at the drop of a hat. And so I think that what he is talking about is being always ready, and that always ready comes first, not other things.
I just love it. And I just thought, listen, I know the cost was great. I would hope they break into smaller groups so where all these generals can talk to each other and to Pete and to others to say, what do you need? What's missing? What concerns you? You know, if you're in the Pacific, what is China's posture? But I want to hear it looking you eye to eye. I want to make the most of this trip, in other words. And the president coming down giving a speech, it was just kind of a generic speech. I didn't see him really knock it out of the park there, especially because Pete didn't waste a word. And the president was kind of talking tariffs and everything. I'm not sure that was necessary. But I would say that I want to make sure that our best military minds feel listened to. Because it looks like Pete really wants to empower them with that mentality that we got your back if you need it. And there's going to be discipline throughout. And I just loved it.
Well, and you know, Brian, I think you make a good point in terms of, talking to each other. I mean, when you have a far-flung operation like the American military, it's around the world, people have to talk in both directions, right? The communications have to go in two directions so that everybody is on the same page, and because readiness is everything. And, what is the mission? Why are we here? What are we supposed to do? All of that has to be front of mind for people at both ends of the ladder, right? They're at the very top and those at the very bottom.
Yeah, just here's a little bit more of Pete's speech.
We've had to make trade-offs and some difficult decisions. It's more of an art than a science. We have been and will continue to be judicious, but also expeditious. The new compass heading is clear. Out with the Shirellis, the McKenzies, and the Millies, and in with the Stockdales, the Schwarzkopfs, and the Pattons.
I love that. So take shots at the people that were telling you, I want to find out about my white rage. What did he call it? What did Mark Milley admit that he has white rage?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I love it. Turn the page, new attitude, get some swagger back. Final thought?
Look, I like the idea of the change. I don't like, though, the demonizing of individuals, because I think that that opens the door for the next go-round. I think there's got to be change, but it doesn't have to be in a way that's viewed as personal attacks. I mean, you can remove a commander, just, and all you need say is, I thought it was important to make a change. You know, you're not required to give reasons. You're not required to damage someone's reputation. No matter how woke somebody was, somewhere along the line, they probably had respect from some people. They probably did some things right. So I'm a little concerned that we're getting ideological purity here when that's not what he's really talking about. He's talking about command cohesion. And I think that's what the goal should be, not an when you wander into the ideological aspect of this and make personal attacks on people, then I feel like you're going to raise hackles and you could get lost in the weeds.
So it's going to be interesting because the first thing they got to do is expand the industrial base. We've been hearing about that for 2 years, 3 years. What are we doing about it? We got to be able to make stuff quicker. We have a bunch of people called allies and countries that heard our call. They're going to build up their military. We want to sell them stuff, but we can't make it fast enough. We have to fix that. And usually we're good at ramping things up. Hopefully we will. Michael,
moving from behind. I mean, China has been building its navy so fast in recent years that we are way behind in where we should be in that regard. So you're right about the manufacturing, the production pipelines. I mean, what we're able to do in the time of war, right? Every factory is just turning out equipment, you know, around the clock. I mean, we need to catch up, which it's very expensive to do that, but it's an absolute necessity.
Senator Wicker put together a great program. I think he's re-released it this week. Hopefully Pete picks it up as Secretary of War. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Thanks, Michael.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I am joined by Executive Vice President at Targeted Victory, Matt Gorman.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Trump, just in those remarks there, I counted, called you a communist 8 times. Mm. Are you?
No. I'm a democratic socialist. I've said that time and again. And I think it reflects the fact that whereas that identity would have been enough for Donald Trump in the past, now he doesn't even want to use that because he knows that the message of my politics is one that is connecting with New Yorkers across the five boroughs.
He's stuck at 43%. So what he did in the primary, he hasn't gained anything. When he was talking about winning over Jewish voters, when he's talking about winning over cops, he really has no answer. That's Zohram Mamdani, the mayor's race of national prominence. Listen when he's asked about Jewish voters. Tell me if you're sold. Cut 32.
I feel the need to earn the support of each and every New Yorker, and that includes Jewish New Yorkers who may have concerns about our campaign or our agenda, and to reassure them as to the focus of this campaign is to deliver for every New Yorker. And what I find, especially now in the High Holy Days, this is a time when Jewish New Yorkers, especially with Yom Kippur, will reflect, will atone, will do the hard work of looking inward. And I think that our politics, our city, could do very well, frankly, to emulate those lessons.
Right. Thank you for that. And I'm sure every Jewish New Yorker feels better having heard that. So they can reflect. So Jewish people can reflect on why Zohram Mamdani doesn't like them more. But it's up to Cuomo. Governor Cuomo is essentially going to say, and or Curtis Sliwa, Cuomo's going to say, you might not like me, I'm not perfect, but I'm so much better than him. And he has evidently got a lot of money flowing into his campaign. But remember why he's not governor. The reason why he's not governor, maybe he wouldn't have run for election again. I remember Kathy Hochul beat Lee Zeldin. But the reason why he's not governor possibly now or just fresh off a full term is because he left in scandal and disgrace. And most New Yorkers say, I don't like the guy. I thought he was terrible during the pandemic. I would take him over Mondami, but I am not a Cuomo fan. I like Sliwa if Sliwa can close the gap. I want to see the first poll when it's just three. That'll be interesting.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.